and welcome to the Stretch Podcast. My name is Lebukule, your host. My guests and I will be having conversations on matters of self-development, emotional well-being, spiritual growth, and overall transformation. These are guests whose work, expertise, knowledge, and wisdom has inspired and moved me tremendously, and I hope that they inspire and move you too. Here is another episode of the Stretch Podcast. Before the episode, just a note to say, if you're hearing this, it means you are not on the subscriber base of the Stretch Podcast, which means you will only be getting half an episode. We do not run adverts on this podcast. We do not plan to. Our income is directly from our subscriber base. We would love for you to join the subscriber base if you love and value what we do here. The subscription is 99 rands. You will get the link to subscribe on the show notes at the bottom or on all of my social media links on the bio. Until then, enjoy this episode. And I will see you, hopefully soon, on the other side. Hey, hey, Dumelang, Dumelang, my friends. It is I, Lebukule, your host, with another episode of the Stretch Podcast. And today, my guest is the phenomenal, the incredible Lebohang Masango, who is an anthropologist, an author, and a phenomenal poet. And I'm going to read her bio just now, but just really briefly how I know her. I mean, I've never met her in person. She's not one of the people that I always talk about that we met, and I don't have a story to share with her, except nothing but pure admiration. I came across Lebohang on social media, on Instagram actually, and I saw that she had written a children's book, Mbumi's Magic Beads. And I remember just being struck by that, you know, I don't know too many young, because she is quite young, I'm guessing she's a millennial, young people who write specifically for children's books. And I was taken by that, and I started following her, and then I got to know that she's a social anthropologist. I got to know that she's a poet. Many of you may have seen her on the DSTV advert. I don't know if it still plays because I don't watch DSTV anymore. I don't watch TV anymore. You'd have seen her on TV. That advert, man, that powerful advert where she starts with saying, "I come as one, but I stand as 10,000. And then she goes on and on. And it's just such a goosebump-inducing advert. And I just followed on Instagram. And then I then saw later that she has written a book with Dr. Judy Dlamini. You know Dr. Judy Dlamini, guys. You must know. She's one of the legends in the country. Phenomenal woman herself. And I remember just feeling intimidated by Lebohang. You know, Lebohang, if you're listening, I didn't share this with you in the conversation, but I always found you very intimidating, very smart, very academic, very sophisticated, you know, sophisticated. There is no lack of a better word. And then one day I just stumbled upon a live that she was doing with her followers on Instagram, which, you know, I'm one of the followers. So I saw a live, which was the first time ever that I see her doing a live. It was in the evening. And I was just taken aback in the best way by how lovely and how approachable and how giggly and how sweet and how I saw another side of her. Because, you know, when you think of poet, anthropologist, author, you are always thinking serious. And I'm saying this because a lot of people who don't listen to my podcast, who read my content online, who read my books, who have read my social media posts, always feel like I'm serious. all the time until they listen to the podcast and then they see another side of me, which is what I love about human beings. We are just so complex. We are multifaceted and we have different sides. And it was that live that made me say, okay, you can, I think, gently slide into the DMs, because I had bought the book Soft Life, which is what we're going to be talking about. I had bought the book and I had started really reading the intro and the acknowledgements, but nothing, I hadn't gone deep. After that live, I went back to my Kindle and I'm like, I remember buying this book, and I started reading so that when I approach her to come to the podcast, it is based on the fact that, you know, I have read her book. And this is the thing that we need to do to honor people's work. If you're going to be interviewing an author based on their book, best you have read it, even if I also fail it. Because at the time that we were having this conversation, I think I was around chapter 4. I hadn't finished the book, but I had had enough to content from it to can have a type of conversation that you guys are going to be listening to right now. So the conversation is really about the book Soft Life, and it's about the phenomenon of what soft lives are and how they find expression in the world today. I mean, soft life, if you really, really think about it, finds its roots back in the days where women who expected opulence and to be taken care of and to be materially and financially supported by men were considered gold diggers back in the days. So it's another version. It's a 21st century version of what a gold digger would be. Sometimes they're called slave queens. And now, remember there was a Blessa Blessee episode. Now it is a soft life episode, which is based on a man that you are in a relationship with, whether married or just casually, materially and financially taking care of you. But the conversation goes deeper, the story goes deeper, because she bases her book on the story of five completely different women who love soft lives and who've had relationships with men who gave them the soft life. But then, you know, there's always kind of a twist, which is very, very powerful, which then tells you about how complex a South African woman is. That in as much as, yes, indeed, I would love for a man to support me financially and to support me in an opulent way, I will not actually stay if I'm disrespected in one way or the other. And that comes through in the conversation, and that comes through in the book. More than anything, and I don't really want to do a spoiler alert, I don't want to tell you about the book, because I did eventually finish the book. I would love for you to buy it, and I would love for you to please listen to the entire conversation, which means you have to subscribe if you haven't subscribed. Now, let me read her bio. It is a little long, but I'm going to read the whole first paragraph because it's just quite important, and she's just earned so many accolades, which I feel like I have to just read them through and just struggle through my dyslexia and the fact that I actually can't see properly anymore, guys. You know, the late 40s are like dealing with me in the biggest way. My eyes get blurry, and I did go to an optometrist around April, and they gave me such an interesting price, like a phenomenally high price. And I thought, yeah, get la libona. But it looks like before the end of September, I really have to get glasses. So it's a combination of the fact that the words move around, you know, from that mild dyslexia, but also they get blurry. You know, it just blurs up and then I tear up. I really, really need glasses. But I did push through to read her entire first paragraph so that, you know, you get to understand who the person is. But the entire bio is there, and her social media handle are there. And do follow her, do buy her book, and let's just support the work of our artists, of our creatives, of our authors, of our content creators. She is one incredible young lady. And, you know, I'm guessing she's quite young. She's probably in her 30s, maybe even late 20s. I don't know, we didn't get to that. But I just see an incredible woman when she hits her late 40s and 50s. Now, let me read her bio. Lebohang Masango earned her Master's of Arts degree in Social Anthropology from the University of Witwatersrand, South Africa. She's a writer and award-winning poet. She's also the award-winning author of children's book Mpumi's Magic Beads. A lot of you know about Mpumi's Magic Beads, I'm sure, which is available in all 11 South African official languages. The book has been awarded the 2018 South African Independent Publishers Award for Children's Books, 2019 South African Literary Award for Children's Literature, the 2019 Exclusive Books EBSA Awards for Best Writer, and a 2020 Gold Pendering Advertising Award in the publication Design Whole Publication category. She has co-authored Grow to be Great, Awesome South African Achievers with Dr. Judy Dlamini, and Mpumi and Jabu's Magical Day with Professor Claudine Storbeck, the director for the Center for Deaf Studies at the University of Witwatersrand. And it has been awarded a 2021 Silver Pendering Advertising Award in the Publication Design Whole Publication category. She has written Nanana Busile Sile for Wimpy and Ethnic Kids, Our Story, Your Language Campaign, co-authored Ushumile Kolobeya Dichila. Ushumile Kolobeya Dichila for Save the Children SA in 2020, and written The Great Cake Contest as part of the Voluntary Literary Initiative Book Dash in 2018. I will stop there. I needed to read this as it is because, I mean, this is just such a phenomenal achievement. And with my weird reading, you know, based on this mild dyslexia that I always share, I needed to read this because at the time that I was interviewing her, I did know that she has written a children's book. I did know of Mpumi and the Magic Beads, but I did not know that it was published in all 11 languages. I did not know that she was already, it's a series, she's already on book 7, and you will hear in the conversation. And I mean, this is just one phenomenal South African woman who, honest to God, it was an honor to have a conversation with her on her latest book, Soft Lives, which I've already touched on what it is that the book is about. Now, without further ado, I give you my very, very important, you know, I like to put adjectives on my conversations, but this is an important conversation that if you are a young woman or even an older woman with a young daughter, or just as a woman in the world in South Africa, you really want to listen to this conversation. But more than that, you want to read the book. I have since read the entire book and it really gets deeper because by the time I was interviewing her, sometime in July, I was around chapter 4. I have since finished the book and it is a must read. It is an important book in the country to understand the latest trend in pop culture, in socioeconomics, and how complex. I mean, if there's one thing that is very, very clear that Soft Life is showing me, is how complex and how diverse and how quite unique South African black women are. We are really, really a unique breed. And I would love nothing more than for you to actually buy the book. Without much ado, I give you my conversation with the phenomenal anthropologist, author, and poet, Lebohang Masango. Lebohang Masango is on the Stretch Podcast. Oh my God, welcome. I'm so excited and I'm so happy you agreed to have a conversation with me. Welcome.
Hi, Lebo. It is such a pleasure to be here with you today. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and thank you for your grace. I mean, I didn't even think you'd respond so quickly. You know, I know you are busy. I'm a little stalker of you. I've been following you for a long time. And I'm fascinated by your path and the work that you do, the many hats that you wear. So perhaps let's start there. Let's start with, how is it that you are a poet, a social anthropologist, an author? I know you've written a children's book some time ago, which was so fascinating for me. I know you've written a book with Ausi Judy Dlamini, and you have written this amazing book called Soft Life, which is what we're going to talk about today. So how is it that you are this person?
I think it is all about my love for words, because, you know, when you look at all of those various hats that I wear, as you mentioned, to be a social anthropologist, to be a poet, and to be an author or a writer, all of that is centered around my love for reading and writing. And so that is where everything flows from, my immense passion for words.
And you come from a family of people who read, people who write. Just a little background of where you come from, who you are.
Yes, definitely. My parents love to read. I just grew up with books being a staple feature of our household, although that is not any, that's not the work that my parents ended up doing. But in terms of, you know, me, I was born in Sweden, and then we took parents who were in exile, and then we came over to South Africa when I was really young, about 3 or 4, and then began living in Pretoria, if I'm not mistaken. So I lived in Pretoria for a very long time, went to primary school there. And then in grade, when I was 8 years old, I began dancing. I did ballet. And so by the time it was time to go to high school, my passion for dancing had really grown. And so I went to an arts high school called the National School of the Arts to study classic and contemporary dancing, as well as other academic subjects. And then when it was time to choose a university, I decided to go to WITS. And that's actually where my journey with social anthropology began, because I did a BA and it's one of the modules that I chose. And ever since then, it's been an incredible journey of, you know, knowledge, research, knowledge production as well, and just getting to know myself and the world around me through the lens of social anthropology, which has been an amazing gift to my life.
No, it's a beautiful subject. I always say to my friends, if I were to do a degree, I would do social anthropology, or I would do philosophy, or I would do sociology, because of just my interest in human behavior, in how societies evolve and change, how new trends come and go. And I see it come through in the book that you wrote, your latest book, ne? Soft Life.
It is my latest, but it's also my first attempt at writing for an adult audience. And then it's basically from my master's research on similar topics.
Yeah, and we'll talk about those just now. I'm also interested in you as a poet, you know, because like I say, I've been following for a while. I mean, my first introduction to you was on social media when you had written the children's book. And I was just so taken, I was so stunned that a Black young person has written a children's book. It didn't occur to me at the time, Hore. There aren't many Black women who write for children's book that is not necessarily for academia. And then I then followed later and I discovered you are also a poet. And then we saw you on TV with that powerful, powerful advert at DSTV. And then I saw that you wrote a book with us, Judy Dlamini. And I'm like, you know, I actually absolutely adore this woman. And it's really, truly an honor that you are here. But tell me a little bit about poetry. What is it about poetry that we don't get?
So the thing with poetry is that it's just an absolutely magical form of writing. I've been in love with poetry pretty much for all of my life. And what I love about it is that it can help you and heal you, whoever you are and whoever you're going through. There's an amazing There's an amazing scholar and poet named Audre Lorde, who's no longer with us, but she wrote an essay and the title was Poetry is Not a Luxury. And she just speaks about the necessity of poetry in Black women's lives. And that is the most illuminating piece of work about poetry. And it's something that I agree with immensely, in that I have needed poetry my entire life. It has healed me and helped me in so many ways. And I think I'm quite honored that I get to also write poems, because in the same way that poets all over the world and their work has really been a light in my life, it's quite an honor that I get to create work as well that can be a light to other people's lives. So for me, poetry is really the most incredible way of expressing ourselves and just sharing about the human experience and sharing about the things that are most dear to us in ways that other people can access them as well.
Yeah, I agree that it's magical. I agree that it's healing. It's so mystical. I mean, I do know Audre Lorde, the feminist. Yes, I love her writings. I remember reading somewhere that, I just don't remember who it was, but she was trying to explain what poetry is. And she was like, you know, poetry is that thing that catches you while you're in the field plowing or planting something, and it comes as a wind, and you better catch that wind as it comes to you. But if you happen to not be able to catch it as it comes through, you can catch the tail end. And when you write the poetry, the words come backwards.
Oh, that is beautiful. Wow.
And why did you feel like you should write a children's book? Was it because there aren't many people like you and I who write children's books, or was it just a love for children?
So I, you know, grew up obviously as a child reading children's books, and I think it's a form of writing that I have a lot of respect for, coming up with original stories to entertain and educate young minds. I think is a very wonderful way to spend one's time. And so what happened with that was that I was in the middle of my master's thesis, and I recall I struggled through my master's as a lot of people struggle through master's. So there was just a time when my brain was so exhausted with that form of writing and that form of research and knowledge production. And I actually needed to give my brain a break. And so I always try to do something creative when my brain is tired. And so I decided to read a whole lot of children's books whenever I take a break from writing my thesis. And in that, I just realized that, you know, I would love to try this. It was actually a form of procrastination as well, because much later than I was supposed to, but in the middle of this master's, I managed to write an entire children's book. And now, Mpumi's Magic Beads, I began writing that in 2017. Now, Mpumi's Magic Beads has grown into a series, and I believe I'm on my 1, 4, 5, 6, 7. I think I've done 5 Mpumi's Magic Beads books, basically. I've done 5 of those, and there's 2 more coming this year. They are just at the printers, I'm sure. So it's just grown into a series. It's grown into a character that a lot of people love. It's just been very transformative for my life as well. So it also does come from a love of children and just having respect for children as human beings as well, which is like very central to my philosophy of how I understand the world and how I understand children. And also just like, just wanting to create more work for children to see themselves, and wanting to be part of the wave of young writers that are actually normalizing the depiction of young Black kids in books, you know, because one day we want this thing to be so ordinary. And I believe it is now, you know, it is so ordinary to be able to find books and the main characters are young Black people navigating not only farm and village life, which was also traditionally a lot of
narratives,
but you know, they're navigating city life, they're navigating different challenges, but also it's not just challenges, it's joy, it's magic, it's flying in the air, you know. And I'm so grateful to be able to contribute to that wave.
No, that's beautiful, nicely said. And I love that you respect children. You know, I'm a professional speaker, and I always say to people that my most terrifying audience are young people and children, because I think I think they have like the most sharpened bullshit detectors. I just love that you approach the work from a place of respect and honor. That's beautiful. Okay, thank you, Lebohang, for your background. I want us now to get into the heart of the matter. So it's August, it's Women's Month, and there's this phenomenon that is called soft life. And it's all over social media. And I bought your book and I read your book and I'm in the middle of it. But that doesn't matter because I would like us to focus on chapter 2 in particular, where soft life finds expression in relationships, love, and choices that women make. And so you open chapter 2 with this clip from Deborah Petter and Kanye Mbau. Mm-hmm. And you made me realize that it is actually Kanye Mbau who demystified the whole thing of women actually wanting, or not all, but the whole thing of there's nothing wrong with wanting a guy to take care of you. I want to live well, and I want this man to just provide as much as he can, and I want to live as soft a life as possible. So I'm just interested in why you chose this subject and how is it unfolding? How did this idea of let me write about soft life come about?
So the idea came from the work that I was doing around my master's. At the time, I'd received a scholarship, and the focus of the scholarship was, the provocation was basically for me to write about gender, about sexuality, and about mobile phones, right? Those were the three, I needed to create a project around those three things. And so I became really fascinated with the idea of blesser and blessees, because that is a phenomenon that is quite recent, but when it started taking shape in 2015 and 2016, I was plugged into that and I watched it happen almost in real time, you could say. And so I became incredibly fascinated, because when we think about what the blesser and blessee phenomenon was, when, you know, we had just come out of a very tumultuous period in South African, among young South African people, because there was fees must fall, right, in 2015. And so that December, you have young women of I suppose university going age coming out and being in all of these luxurious locations, going shopping, traveling first class, etc., all around the world, and people who know them in real life knowing that, but this person is either unemployed, a junior employee, or a student, how are they affording this life? And all of that speculation gives way for this phenomenon to arise called bless and blessees, as we know. And so for me, those the things that were central to that phenomenon shaping were the things that I was concerned with for my scholarship and for my master's scholarship, which was gender, sexuality, and mobile phones, right? And so I begin to construct this project, really investigating what this entire thing is about. And because I'm a feminist, I took a feminist approach to it. So I didn't just take it for granted that all of this negative coverage and negative discourse and public conversation is happening around these young Black women. And people are saying that these young women sleep with men for money and they're prostitutes and all of this awful negative representation. I chose to dig a little bit deeper. And so that's where my interest starts for my master's. But by the time I write Soft Life, which is an adaptation of my master's, what I notice is that actually, even with the example you bring up of Kanye Mbau, what I keep trying to show people is that because we live in a patriarchal society, there are some women who will actually want to fight some of patriarchy standards, but there are actually some women who will embrace them quite openly. And I wanted to be able to show the hypocrisy that comes about when, on one hand, when men want to embrace patriarchy, then it's almost as if everyone should go along with it unquestioningly. But when a woman leans into it and says, okay, so if one of the principles of patriarchy is that men should be protectors and providers, and I'm going to lean into that fully and expect it, and in fact, not only expect it, but be completely unapologetic and vocalized, what does society do to that woman? And so that was interesting to me, because what Kanye Mbau was vocalizing in that Deborah Petter interview, with her complete comfort with the life that she had and her complete refusal to be shamed, is something that has carried through, I think, throughout time, to the point where this blessee phenomenon takes place, to the point where we are with people calling people slay queens, and to the point where we are here with soft life. So I really just wanted to create a vantage point that could look at this phenomenon and all of them, see their linkages, and show that women are not to be vilified and demonized for actually just leaning into something that is quite a norm according to patriarchy.
That is, oh my God, that is so fascinating. Because if we live in a patriarchal society that says indoda must do this and this, and this is something that men embrace very well. They like it. You know, they like to be the head of the household. They like to lead. They like to give direction. But then when a woman embraces the heart of it, which is the provision, then we are called all sorts of names. I mean, it's an old phenomenon from gold digger. Remember the old name called gold diggers? Today, it's now the slay queens and all that. Now, here's what's fascinating about, or what I found fascinating in the book, because I want us to get into the characters themselves. So before we even talk about the characters in the book, there's another video that you highlighted of, it's Lelo and Nicole, that I think it sort of either went viral on Twitter or not, but they were talking about how they don't want to date a broke guy. And this is when it's way after Kanyimbau and embracing Mandla, right? And what I found interesting was, one of them, I think it's Lelo, who said a broke guy is someone who earns less than 50K a month. And I remember just laughing at how she says a guy who does a 9-to-5 and earns less than 50K, because that's just not going to be enough. He's not going to be able to provide. But then I was sitting and thinking, that's fine, but how realistic is that given the economic situation of South Africa and of Black men in South Africa? I mean, you know the demographics probably better than me, that a lot of young men are unemployed and they're in jail and they're not reaching the standards that the Lelos and the Nicoles of this world want. So the question, I suppose, is how realistic is this need to be provided for?
So I love that you brought that up, and you know, the addition of this video by Lelo Nicole, and in fact, in every single chapter, I make sure to start it with a pop culture moment that we can all identify with and hope to provoke us to think differently about it, or to think of it within the frame I'm interested in, which is, you know, relationships and the socioeconomic condition of South Africa. So what I find really fascinating about this video is that, you know, these are young women, and I'm not sure what exactly it is that they do in terms of occupations or whether they're students, but we could assume that they're university students or could be in that age group. And so to have these very huge financial demands was just fascinating to me, because it also speaks to how the internet and having access to other young influencers and how they live in the US and the UK or in other places, I think has been incredibly influential and impressionable on the minds of young women in South Africa, because people are no longer necessarily thinking about the material condition of the country, but they are thinking about the exceptionalism as shown by the internet, which is that if those people can access people who are so incredibly rich, then why wouldn't I be able to access that too, you know? So that is something I find very fascinating. And in terms of how realistic it is, that is the thing that also concerns me, because to have a young man working a job at a call center or as a cashier or anything else that might be a little bit low income, that is a reality, because at the end of the day, South Africa is a poor country, you know, despite what our politicians might show us, despite what we see on Instagram, etc. South Africa is a poor country. And of course, that poverty is further entrenched by the fact that all of these funds that are meant to uplift people out of poverty, are meant to empower people in various ways, those are constantly being diverted for luxury trips and bags and wigs. We know that. So this is why I wanted to write this book, Level, because There's such a huge difference between the material condition outside in South Africa and what people are telling themselves and saying to themselves. But at the same time, I think it's not a bad thing, because it's important as a human being, as an individual, to have the capacity to dream, to imagine, to want the best for yourself. I think that's important. And I actually want all young women in South Africa to constantly want the best for themselves.
So on one hand,
Bolelo and Nicole and all the other young women, they must have their beliefs about who they are, what they're worth, what they deserve, and they must stick to that. And of course, it is possibly going to be a challenge in South Africa, but of course, they don't have to stay in South Africa, right?
No,
the world is their oyster, and I really hope that all the young women who want more for themselves can get it.
Yeah, which then brings me to another phenomenon that brings about soft life that not necessarily linked to.
Well, this is the end of the road for you. If you want to continue listening to this episode, you will have to subscribe to the Shrek podcast for 99 rand. The link to subscribe will be found on all the show notes at the bottom and on all of my social media handles on a link tree. It simply says subscribe to the Shrek podcast, and then you will get all the episode in full, plus bonus episodes and some of the coaching notes that I share with subscriber only. Until then, I will see you next week with another episode. Love and green lights to you.